couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the films Antebellum, The Devil All the Time, All In, The Fight for Democracy, and Ratchet. I'm also going to be talking about some news and the box office and the trailer park, plus an interview with The Devil All the Time director Antonio Campos and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the controversial film Cuties on Netflix, because unlike many people who are sounding off on this movie, I've actually watched it and can form an opinion about it. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@themovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Couple pieces of news. First of all, I'm at a milestone. This is nothing that's actually like known externally from the show, but if you follow it as a podcast and you look at the website, fatguysatthemovies.com, this is the 700th show of Fat Guys at the Movies. This show started out as just a rinky-dink little podcast back in 2007 in March, where me and the editor of Film School Rejects, Neil Miller, started this little podcast. I don't even know if you can get the old episodes. And we did a couple like secondary shows, but it's been going on a weekly basis for 13 years and we are hitting the 700th show. So that means a little bit to me. So, you know, congratulations to myself. Let's move on and talk about the box office here rather than the fourth segment, because it is more about news. It's not really about what happened to the box office last weekend, but more what's not happening at the box office. And the reality is, and I talked about this in depth last week, Tenet was not the panacea of saving cinema that everybody said it would be. In fact, Tenet has had a really depressing box office in the States. And that includes the Canadian total. So it's even bolstered up by the Canadian totals, and the theaters up there are pretty much open. What that says is what I've been saying for a long time is, unfortunately, movies in the theater are not essential. It's not like getting groceries or even eating out. At the very least, people going and eating out, you have to eat at some point, and sometimes it is nice to not do it at home, but it's not essential to go to the theaters. Unfortunately, I love going to the theaters, but it is not essential, and people are responding. I even had a doctor's appointment this week, and I asked my doctor point blank. I said, what do you, because I'm always asked on the radio, should you go to the theater? And he's like, you know, with the coronavirus, it's about the two Ds. It's about duration and distance. And even if you're distant from people in a movie theater, you're in there for like 2 or 3 hours and the air circulates. So you have no control over that. You don't know if people are going to keep their masks on while they watch the movie, certainly not while they eat. And he says, that's the problem, is how long you're in the movie theater. So that's why, you know, and that's straight from a doctor's mouth, my own personal doctor. Where I'm like, hey, I've read this. You tell me, because I haven't had an actual doctor's appointment through this whole pandemic yet. But as a result of Tenet having a really low box office, that means Wonder Woman moved, and that got moved to December, I think Christmas Day. We'll see if that actually sticks. But they also moved Candyman, so that's out of the picture. Black Widow and Soul are still there, but there's a lot of rumors right now that those are going to get shifted. Whether or not Black Widow is going to go to Disney Plus or a premium Disney Plus, who knows? We still haven't seen the full fallout from Mulan, whether Mulan made enough money. I know Mulan didn't do terribly well in China. It didn't do as well as they wanted it to. I wouldn't say it bombed, but that's not going to make up the box office, but we'll see how much it made in the States, because at $30 a rental, that's still a lot of money. We'll see what happens. My guess is if Black Widow moves to premium Disney Plus, it'll be cheaper. I think if they were smart, they'd sell it for $15, but you have to have the Disney subscription. $15 is a steal for that movie. And I think everyone would rent it, not just the Disney fans, just the hardcore fans. And then Soul, there's rumors that Soul might end up on Disney Plus. Who knows? I mean, that's the Pixar movie. Because the question is, people aren't willing to go to the theaters to see the grown-up films alone. Are they going to take their kids? Probably not. you might be able to get a little bit more money off of something like Soul, because that's something the whole family is going to watch. Another piece of Disney news is Tatiana Maslany has been cast as She-Hulk in the Disney Plus original series that's going to be coming out. Again, here we're seeing stuff where Disney is starting to double down on their online stuff. They're restructuring how they distribute movies, and the rest of the studios got to look at that, because Disney is going to be leading the pack on this, because they have their own outlet 100% theirs. I mean, it's not even like Warner Brothers having a piece of the HBO Max distribution, which is still not found on every device. One piece of silly news is Madonna is apparently going to be directing her own biopic, which means it's going to suck terrible. Here's why. Biopics are not for somebody to make their own version. One of my problems, in fact, with Rocket Man when that came out, what was that, last year, the year before, is it was partly produced by Elton John, so it's going to be very positive to him. That was part of the problem with the Jesse Owens film Race, is that it was, it was his own family making the movie, so of course they were going to make it very sensitive to him. They're not going to show any sort of conflict in there. They're not going to show the darker side of anybody's history, and everybody has that. And I honestly have zero interest in watching a movie that Madonna makes about herself. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Speaking of Disney Plus, let's talk about their new trailer that they dropped this week for The Mandalorian Season 2, which will be streaming on Disney Plus on October 30th.
You must reunite it with its own kind.
Where?
This you must determine. The songs of eons past tell of battles between Mandalore the Great and an order of sorcerers called Jedi.
You expect me to search the galaxy and deliver this creature to a race of enemy sorcerers?
This is the way.
I'm going to make up a conspiracy theory, because apparently people have conspiracy theories everywhere. And those things are very popular to the point that they make people ignore reality. So here's my conspiracy theory. Disney is trying to suppress the vote by dropping The Mandalorian a week before Election Day, because they know people are going to be staying at home watching The Mandalorian and won't bother to go vote. But that's, of course, a nonsense conspiracy theory, because we know that people are going to burn through this over the weekend. I mean, there's going to be 8 episodes. You can burn through that Saturday and Sunday. You can come out of your Halloween parties from Saturday and on November 1st, watch the whole thing on Sunday, and then go back to work on Monday, and then go vote on Tuesday. Anyways, The Mandalorian Season 2, this looks interesting. I love the fact they're enriching the universe in this. They're bringing in more elements. It was a very slow start, and I was okay with that for the first season, but it looks like they're bringing in more and more Star Wars elements, which is what you're going to have to do. You got to bring something more to the table. I was really jazzed by the trailer for this. The next one I want to talk about is The Trial of the Chicago 7, which drops on Netflix on October 16th.
Martin's dead. Bob is dead. Jesus is dead. They tried it peacefully. We gonna try something else.
These rebels without a job,
they're a threat to national security.
This revolution, we may have to hurt somebody's feelings.
There have been a lot of political movies made. Here's another one that's coming out, and this is relevant simply because of all the protests that have been happening. This is relevant to the protest and relevant to the prosecutions of protesters, and are the protesters at fault for riots, and is there violence behind it or that? There's a lot of questions that are being brought up today that we can go look at stuff in history, you know, from the 60s and the 70s. And I think this is the most relevant thing to have on our schedule. It's written by Aaron Sorkin, so you know it's going to be hard-hitting and fast. It looks interesting. It looks like it's got a great cast, so I'm very interested in seeing this movie, and I'll be talking about that in about a month. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Devil All the Time and interview its director. to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about The Devil All the Time. Several families from two towns in Ohio and West Virginia clash under the backdrop of religion and violence.
You ever think about how we ended up orphans living in the same house?
I know what my daddy did.
You take pictures?
I do. I see a smile pretty enough to photograph, that is.
That ain't no preacher. He's as bad as they got on the radio.
When people look back on it, they had no other choice.
Excuse me, preacher. You got time for a sinner?
This dropped on Netflix earlier this week. I think it dropped on like Wednesday or Thursday, but it's based on a book. And it's got a fantastic cast. You've got like Tom Holland and Robert Pattinson and Jason Clarke, Riley Keough, who of course is Elvis's granddaughter. You also have Haley Bennett. There's a whole bunch of people in the very recognizable faces and a really good cast for this. And being based on a book, it's about a book that has its intertwining storylines of all these different characters from multiple eras, like stuff from the 20s and stuff from the 40s and stuff from the 60s. Whenever you have that in a book, it makes it very hard to adapt. I've not read the book, but I can see where they're really sort of twisting and turning and trying to fit all this into a 2.5 hour movie. And for the most part, they do. And weirdly enough, it actually does drag at points. I mean, you really feel like it could have been slimmed down and leaned up a bit. It's ultimately Tom Holland's story. It's about him knowing where he came from and the impact of a religion on his history, but also the impact of religion and love and family and devotion that sometimes all goes over the deep end, not just in his history, but in his present and in his future. And it shows how people can pervert religion and can use it to their own advantage. And just because something can be good, like religion, ultimately can be good, it does not mean that that is unassailable. That does not mean that it's not something that can't be corrupted. And that's important because I really took that as part of the message of the movie, or at least the kind of what the movie's saying. And even the people who are devoted to the religion and good people in here, if you are too into it, sometimes you can cycle into a level of naivete. And that can work against you as well. But ultimately, this is one of those skullduggery kind of movies. Bad things happening to good people. You've got some very, very disturbed folks using and manipulating situations, and it tenses things up. But I mean, the stories draw the lines. You know, if you think of the storylines as taffy, the taffy is stretched up across decades and through different characters. So it's a deep and thick movie. Not a whole lot of humor to it. It's very heavy and at times very dark. And that's okay. I think the best performances are Tom Holland. He does the best job in the movie, but also Bill Sarsgaard as his father is quite good. He, of course, played Pennywise. He does a different turn here in this movie. Jason Clarke's quite good in this movie. Robert Pattinson's over the top. Robert Pattinson chews the scenery a lot. If there's anybody who takes you out of the movie, it's the ridiculous accent that Robert Pattinson puts on his character. But that was a personal choice. I mean, some of the other ones, like Jason Clarke, is quite good in the film as well, as a really creepy role. And Sebastian Stan, who, I mean, they got all these different superhero people, you know, people from Marvel and DC. But Sebastian Stan, who of course is best known for playing the Winter Soldier, he plays a corrupt sheriff in one of the towns trying to keep everything together for himself. And I think that all works. So, you know, when it comes to the movie itself, it does run a little bit long, and it does take its time to get to its point. But ultimately, it's an interesting movie, although I wouldn't necessarily call it an entertaining movie. But I'm still going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I had a chance to sit down with director Antonio Campos, who directed this film. And it's a quick little interview, but two big questions that I had. One of them, of course, being from Ohio, had an interest in this, but partly because the movie itself is a look at Southern Ohio and Western West Virginia. And I have family from this area. They filmed it in Alabama. So, But I have family from this area, so I kind of know the, I mean, I don't have the backwoods elements as much, but I certainly know the interpersonal politics and the, you know, the structure that happens sometimes in societal structure. So it's an interesting look. But I had this chance to interview Antonio, and here's what he had to say. Let's start off with the message of this film, which is deeply seated in religion. I mean, the bad people manipulate it, and the good people are sometimes naive by it. Is there a positive message of religion to be taken out of this film?
I tend to not make films that have, like, messages at the end. I always tend to, like, use the process of making a film as a way of exploring it to see what I come out of it feeling and exploring something that I'm interested or struggling with or fascinated by. And with religion, I see in this film, there are some characters. The focus of the film is definitely those that have like extreme relationships with religion. But there are the characters that have, where you sense this kind of everyday comfort that they get from their religion. Like Emma Russell is someone who is not into the extreme that she sees when she sees that spider sermon. You know, there is the beauty of the music that you get with those two preachers that feels transcendent, and that feels like this comforting space. And that's quickly changed when he starts becoming mysterious and ominous and starts to bring out that jar of spiders. But for me, I feel like the film touches on the comforting space that religion can play in one's life, and then is focused on the sort of extreme place religion can go, and where people in power can take advantage of people's faith. And then at the end of the day, you know, at the end of this movie, and I don't want to give it away, but there is a moment where a character is trying to figure out what to do next. And the thought is like, I could do this, I could go there, I could go there. I should probably just pray on it. I don't even know, like he's not a religious person. And I think that there is a sense that he himself, despite all of the insanity, is still wrestling with his own feelings about religion. And I think that he recognizes that with his grandmother, there is something comforting and warm about it, but it's gotten all mixed up with all these other characters and his experiences in life. So I guess that's kind of stuff that I'm wrestling with or thinking about.
The other question is that I'm from Ohio myself. I'm about an hour from where this would take place. Did you specifically make it a point to not make everybody a hillbilly? Because, you know, that seems to be where this could easily fall into caricature. But, you know, even especially Tom Holland's character seemed very grounded.
I'm not into like any, I don't know into caricatures. I like characters and I like big characters, but I like to ground it in some sort of reality. And luckily the source material is so rich that not only was, you know, we were building off of that. So, you know, these were very complex, well-rounded people, and they were being performed by really great actors. So, you know, there's always a danger of people in these kinds of settings to go down that road, but we were just I don't know, none of us were interested in doing anything like that, and very aware of sort of creating very interesting, complicated people.
Antonio, thank you so much for talking about the film.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
That was Antonio Campos, the director of The Devil All the Time. Thank you so much for being on the show. And that is it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Antebellum and Ratchet. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Antebellum. A woman finds herself living as a slave in the Antebellum South on a plantation taken over by Confederate soldiers.
We're expected to be seen, not heard. But we are the future. Our time is now.
I'm coming!
I can tell. You're special.
What is the plan?
We go tonight. The world has to find out about this.
This was another one of those casualties of the coronavirus. It was supposed to come out, I believe, this June, sometime in the summer. And it just kept getting moved. And then finally they said, heck with it, we're putting it on premium video on demand. It's going to cost you $20 to see it anywhere you can rent a movie. Pretty much, you know, like Vudu, iTunes, YouTube, Google, wherever you want to watch it. And always with that price tag, again, you have to understand if you're just a single person living alone, unfortunately, that's kind of a high price. But if you've got two or three people in the household who are interested in the movie, it's kind of a steal. It's cheaper than going to see it at the theaters. And in that sense, I think that that's building a new market, and we're getting more of these. I wouldn't be surprised if Candyman does that at some point, where you're going to build a market of people who are like, oh, we can do these $20 premium video on demand movies and enjoy them. And they're just like the stuff in the theaters. But in Antebellum, it's the story of this woman, and she's, like it says, she's a slave. She's played by Janelle Monáe, and she's a beautiful woman, by the way. I mean, she's been in a bunch of stuff. She was in the movie Harriet, and I think she was in Hidden Figures as well. She is the slave, and she's stuck in this plantation. There's something more going on, and I'm going to be really cagey about how I describe this, because the more you talk about it, the more you give away. This movie is best seen knowing the least amount about it. But the point is that she's there in the South on this plantation. She's wanting to escape. She's trying to escape. And she's been caught, and other people have been caught, and, you know, they're treating them as they would slaves, as animals. You know, they're using physical punishment. They're bedding them without consent. They're forcing them to work. They're killing them if they find it necessary. But there's a little bit more to it. Let's just say there's a contemporary element to this movie. And in a way, it reminds me a lot of a Twilight Zone episode. And I'm a sucker for those kind of things. I love movies that, if they're done well, are a Twilight Zone episode. They're sort of like a science fiction or speculative piece that seems to put you out of time, sometimes put you in different perspectives, or things change. The movie Vast of Night was a great example. I mean, almost very deliberately meaning to play as a Twilight Zone episode. M. Night Shyamalan is accused all the time of making movies that are essentially Twilight Zone episodes, but I love that kind of stuff. If it's done well, I think it's great. And I have to say, Antebellum has done very well. It's got suspense. It's hard hitting. It really puts you in that what would you do situation. And what's better? What would have been worse? Not what's better, because neither is better. But what would have been worse? Being just a slave in the South and not knowing any better? Or being a slave but knowing that slavery later on doesn't exist? I mean, which would be worse, being stuck in that knowing that you shouldn't be, or just being stuck in it and not knowing any better, and that's the sum total of your existence? I mean, that brings that stuff up. Now, it's getting a little bit of negative reviews, people saying that, you know, it minimizes some of it. It doesn't fully explore the horrors of slavery. And I mean, it does at certain points, but, you know, it's not meant to be 12 Years a Slave, or even Harriet, or Birth of a Nation, that one, the one about the slave rebellion that was made a couple years ago. That's not the point of this movie. The point of the movie is sort of that Twilight Zone-esque feel to it, but also shining a light on if you were in that situation, it would suck, wouldn't it? And I think that does it effectively. Sure, it's not a deep dive into the cultural and historic implications of it. It's somewhat surface, but it's effectively done and very well executed. And so I have to say, I was quite impressed by it, and I thought it was a great little movie. So I'm going to say that Antebellum totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is actually a TV show, and that is Ratchet. Sarah Paulson stars as Nurse Mildred Ratchet in this Hitchcockian prelude to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I know how you feel right now. Told that you're mad when that's what's driving you mad.
I should have never let you into this hospital.
Letting me into this hospital was the best decision you ever made.
This is on Netflix, and it just dropped this weekend. It's 8 episodes. It's done by Ryan Murphy, and that's important because his fingerprints are all over it. And he directs some of it, and of course his fingerprints are going to be all over it. If you go and watch the trailer, I tried to excise as much of this out of it because it doesn't belong in the presentation of the movie, there's like this Broadway song going on in the background of the trailer that has no place whatsoever in this show. That is ultimately what I think shows the dichotomy that Ryan Murphy has. On one hand, he loves the weird and the bizarre and the creepy, which is why he produced so many shows of American Horror Story. But at the same time, he loves the fabulous nature of the show choir and Glee, you know, or something like Popular, one of his earlier shows. So that's why it seems to be hung on this backdrop of Broadway, but it really has nothing to do with it. In fact, the music in the trailer is terrible because the music in the movie or the series, it's meant to be Hitchcockian or really more Bernard Herrmann. It actually uses the theme from Cape Fear, done in the tempo and energy that the Martin Scorsese version does. I mean, just plain old uses it. It doesn't mimic it or ape it. It just uses that theme. And so you have that intense Bernard Herrmann soundtrack, which also, of course, Herrmann did the soundtrack to Psycho. It feels less like Hitchcock and more like Brian De Palma. So it's imitating the imitator of Hitchcock. I mean, it uses like stuff like split screen. There's a lot of really interesting camera stuff that they do. Split screen, they do some great stuff with color and how color attaches to emotions and people's motivations. It's very bright and vibrant. I mean, almost over the top in the design. And the series itself, it's simpler than an American Horror Story show. And part of my problem with American Horror Story, as much as I love horror movies, I always felt that Ryan Murphy didn't understand horror movies, but he just threw all the imagery on there because he could. It's almost like he just read an encyclopedia or a Wikipedia page and then said, oh, horror movies have all this stuff, and then shook it up in a box and dumped it out on the floor. And that's how you got the American Horror Story seasons. I stopped watching it after like season two or three because I didn't think they were very good. This one's a little more focused and it's a little more suspense driven and it's a little more skullduggery and everybody's back story, which works better in a Ryan Murphy setting. When it comes to the character of Ratchet, as great of a performer as Sarah Paulson is, I do think it completely abandons what the essence of Nurse Ratchet was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I always saw Nurse Ratchet as somebody who just had this mundane, kind of lame job as this nurse in this state hospital, but that was her little cone of perfection, and she had her rules, and no one was going to break those, and she'd come down on you hard, but she'd just go home and eat a TV dinner and go to bed. She didn't have any sort of grand design, and she wasn't necessarily manipulative, she was just rigid. In the book and in the movie, it represents the rigidness of the follow the rules of the American government, or you're going to be put away. I mean, that's really what Ken Kesey was putting out with the book, and then, of course, when they made the movie, that was the symbolism of Nurse Ratched, and I think they abandoned that for a much richer backstory. And of course that makes sense because otherwise this would be a really boring movie about her going home and eating TV dinners. So overall, I mean, it's a very fabulous show and it has all these elements of big grandeur and it's lush and it's cool and it's got a fantastic soundtrack. Just realize it's not a true update of the character of Nurse Ratched. But still, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to review All In, The Fight for Democracy, and talk about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Cuties. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews for the week. And this one is called All In, The Fight for Democracy. Former Georgia gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams takes a look at the history and possible future of voter suppression.
States implement voter suppression laws all across the country.
Things like new voter ID laws, purging. You're knocked off the roll. Gerrymandering.
Changing the voting boundaries. Jim Crow 2.0. That's what we're saying. We've got a lot of work to do.
When we started as a country,
6% of people were eligible to vote.
Our democracy is put at risk.
Now, this is certainly coming from a partisan side. I mean, it's by Stacey Abrams and her people. She was running against Brian Kemp, and we all remember the stories out of Georgia back in 2018, how close it was. And this delves much deeper to that. I mean, what most of us in the rest of the country saw as a clip on the news, this gives a little bit more detail about. And look, I mean, I understand that this is coming from a partisan person, but to me, being against voter suppression should not be a partisan thing. In this country, we have a right to vote. If there's anything that we should have, every citizen should be allowed to vote. And voting should be easy for citizens. And I know there's people that are going, oh, well, you know, with a right comes a responsibility. I get that. But that works on both sides. But we should not have literacy tests. You know, I remember when the movie Selma came out, and you could look up online the literary tests that they used back in Selma to stop black people from voting, and they were horrifying. Voter suppression is a real thing. And the problem is when it comes to video evidence, it's very difficult when the video evidence trumps anything you're trying to point out. And honestly, anytime I've seen a news story about long lines at the polls, it's always in an African American district. It's always in one of those districts that seems to be marginalized. I have, in my entire years, I'm 49 years old, and in my entire years, there has been only one election that I've ever had problems with long lines at the polls, and I think that was in 2004, and that was because there were a whole bunch of issues on the ballot, and nobody read them, so that just the lines took, but even then, it took me like an hour or two to get through. It still was a pretty simple line to get through. I've never had to wait 3, 4, 5, 8 hours to vote. No one should have to wait that long in a modern America, period. No reason. And we should be expanding voting places, and we should be expanding voting opportunities, because people should have the right to vote, period. I don't know how you could argue that people shouldn't have the right to vote. Gerrymandering's wrong. I don't care what side, because both sides do it. One vote should count as much as anybody else's. And that's kind of what this movie's talking about. And once you get past the sort of the first third is kind of a history of Stacey Abrams. Once you get past that, you get into the history of voting suppression and the tricks that were used and the things that were done and why things that seem benign, like a voter ID law, can be a problem for somebody who doesn't have that ID or the paperwork, or they just don't have it, whether they're go back for years where some people didn't even have birth certificates because they were slaves or immigrants who maybe things have changed or something like that. There's a bunch of reasons that they lay out of why the law itself, the concept of it isn't bad, but the way people go about enforcing it can be. And I think that that's something that left or right, everybody should look at. And people should be allowed to vote, period. That's where I stand. And I don't see how that's partisan at all. So I think this is a worthwhile movie to watch. It certainly looks at what happens sometimes, inadvertently or not. So I'm going to have to say all in, the fight for democracy kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today, I'm going to be talking about the movie Cuties, which is on Netflix. I'm also going to be talking about the controversy as well in my review. But here's the thing. I've seen it. I've actually watched the movie. I've taken the 90-some minutes to sit down and watch the movie, which a lot of people refuse to do. And those people, I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to hear from anyone who hasn't seen the movie. If you want to take issue with the movie, watch the movie, look at it in its cultural context, and then we can have a cogent conversation about it. But anyways, I don't have a trailer because it's in French. I could not find an English dubbed trailer, but you can go look up the trailer. The story is about a Muslim girl from French Senegal who strives to break away from her overbearing traditional family by joining a dance competition. Now, the big controversy is everyone's saying, oh, this is fodder for pedophiles. Let's just talk about the controversy first. Are there scenes that are uncomfortable to watch? Absolutely. The whole story is she meets these girls in school and one of them lives in her building and they become friends and they're trying to join this dance competition, but they have no adult supervision on this whatsoever. They just put their own dance together and the girl Amy, she looks on a phone that she stole and she basically looks up dances and the dances they have are quite provocative. And so they put together this dance routine. Again, if this has anything to say, it's that giving children an iPhone with no parental supervision is a terrible idea, because this is the stuff that they'll find. And so they, of course, they have these dances that are provocative, but part of it is the girls don't understand any of it, because there's a whole scene in the beginning of the movie where they're talking about sex and they're getting it all wrong. I mean, like, all wrong. So it's clear that these kids are coming at it from a complete world of ignorance. And even when they have the scene where they finally perform their dance, they cut back to the audience, and the audience is horrified. The judges are confused. They don't know what to do. The parents have these looks of concern. People are booing. People are whistling. And by the way, if you don't understand it, whistling in France is a bad thing. They're not doing catcalls and wolf whistles at these girls. They're booing them. They're saying this is inappropriate. Everything about this movie shows that this is inappropriate stuff that's going on. And in the cultural context, the big thing about the cultural context is what this movie shows is girls are sexualized in every aspect of society, even in the most traditional, conservative, religious world. I mean, she gets her first period and her aunt says to her, oh, when I had mine, I was your age and I was engaged, and they had to delay the wedding so that would clear up before they could present her to the family. I'm like, so you got engaged at 11 before you even started menstruating? If there's anything that sexualizes a girl, it's that. That's what they're made for, and that's what they do, and they're not worth anything if they're not operating properly. And her mother says to her, oh, you're a woman now, which sends her the message that you now can do anything a woman can do. No, you can't, not when you're 11. And that's the whole point of the movie, is every turn she's told that her body and her sexuality is the commodity that's going to run her life. Her mother is distraught because her father is getting married to another woman in Senegal. And it's the disposable nature of the mother, because now she's older and heavier. And there's a scene where her mother appears to have maybe done some prostitution. And then at one point, the girl thinks that that's an appropriate thing. It's not. And the director made this movie to show the dangers and the bad nature of sexualizing young girls. She's with you on this message. And if you actually watch the movie in context without your backup, you'll understand that this is a very powerful movie, but also at times very sweet, as you're trying to see her find friends, even in the most inappropriate situations. But this is not kiddie porn. First of all, look, do you really think that there are pedophiles out there trolling Netflix for French films that they got to slag through 90 minutes of coming of age? No, they got the dark web of all. There was that guy on Cheer who just got arrested for child pornography. I mean, when they go looking for that stuff, I guarantee you they're not like, oh, we found a copy of Cuties in your files. It's not Cuties. This reminds me of the time my mom was telling me that my sister had shown her some episodes of Game of Thrones. And I said to her, I go, what'd you think? She goes, oh, they were just pornographic. And I look at her and I go, Mom, you got to watch a little more pornography before you make a comment like that. Yes, they're graphic. And yes, there's stuff that would be inappropriate, but that's not what pornography is. And when they made the movie, they had parental consent and they were following the French laws. And as I understand it, they had a sociologist or psychologist on set with the girls. And I'm sure the director had many conversations with the girls of saying, this is what the message that we're doing. And as we do this, that's what you're trying to show. And so this was all on the up and up, but people just, I mean, they're talking, I mean, God, Ted Cruz and Tulsi Gabbard are talking about having some Justice Department investigation. This was made in France with French money. All Netflix did was buy the movie to film festival and put it on their service. Go complain to Macron if you want to have this prosecuted. It's not. This is not kiddie porn. And by labeling this kiddie porn, you're ignoring the actual bad stuff that's going on. Cuties is a good movie. And for those of you who have not seen it, go watch the movie and then come back and talk to me. But until then, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear somebody not seeing the movie and then telling me, I don't need to see it. I've heard. No, you haven't. You're coming from a place of aggressive, willful ignorance, and I can't deal with that. So I'm going to say Cuties rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Enola Holmes and Kajillionaire. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.